Hello, friends. This is Jason with Path to Gritness podcast. I am your host and so excited to have Sadie Oldham on today. Sadie is a mom of six amazing kids, an avid hiker, and an overcomer. During this podcast, we'll be diving into dealing with hard news, being strong for others in the face of adversity, and pushing forward during loss, as well as finding joy in hiking and pushing yourself. So Sadie, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thanks for having me.
I've been, a little bit Instagram stalking you to see what you're all about and notice a ton of hiking in there. Is that something you're into?
I do. I love to hike. It's been really helpful for lots of hard things.
Yeah. I'm sure. So you had a few goals from what I understand prior to Ethan having cancer. Mm-hmm. What were those goals and what were you trying to work towards?
So I set two goals for myself back in 2021. Sorry, yeah. I have to think about it. Because I was about to turn 40. And I've always really liked fitness and, trying to set new fitness goals for myself. And so I thought I want to try some things that'll really kind of push me out of my comfort zone. And so I set two goals to hit by the time I turned 40. And one was to be able to hike to the top of the Y. If you're not familiar with that, it's a short but really steep and strenuous hike.
Yeah.
Anyway, be able to hike to the top of the Y in under 20 minutes was my goal. I had hiked it a lot of times and usually was around 25 minutes when I hiked it. And so I thought that would really stretch me.
Yeah.
And then I also set a goal to be able to do 10 pull-ups by the time I turned 40.
That's awesome.
I hit the one and I missed the second. I did not make it to the 10 pull-ups. I made it to 8.
That's all good. I'm about to turn 30 and it is scaring me so much. Like, I am not ready for 30 at all. And to see that you hiked the Y in under 20 minutes is insane. No, I wouldn't be able to do it in 30. So
it's a tough goal, but it was good. I really liked it. It helped me.
Yeah. Have you always been like a goal oriented person? Like, do you push yourself a lot that
yeah.
way?
Yeah. Yeah. I've always been really motivated by, goals. And, for years I was having babies and then needing to, set fitness goals for myself in order to get back into shape after I had babies. Anyway, and that's always been something that's been really important to me is to try to take good care of my body and try to, I've also found that mentally exercise is just super important for my mental health. Just to keep me happy. So
that's awesome. Yeah. That's way cool. So you're in the middle of that and then all of a sudden had some terrible, terrible news drop on you.
Yeah.
Can you help our listeners understand what that was and what you went through?
Yeah. So, I got the goal of hiking the Y under 20 minutes and I was hitting it around 18 and was hiking, multiple days a week, different hikes and things, just having a great time. And actually the day before Ethan was diagnosed, I had done a big hike with my husband and two of our other sons. And anyway, Ethan was my 17-year-old son. He had just turned 17 a few months before. And he'd been having some pain in his hip and in his back and just was having some really odd symptoms. And we'd been in and out of the doctor's office a lot. And finally we got him in for an MRI and our doctor called us with the news that he had cancer on August 5th. We got the results from his MRI from our doctor and he just told us, it looks like he has multiple cancerous tumors along his spine. And we're assuming that the other places that he's feeling pain and struggling with are cancer as well. And at this point, the cancer was starting to compress his spine. He had tumors that were compressing and he was starting to go numb throughout his groin and his bottom and down through his legs and feet. And so we had to emergently get him up to Primary Children's so that they could do what's called a laminectomy. They had to remove parts of the bone of his spine so that his spine had room to expand so that nerve damage hopefully wouldn't become permanent. Anyway, it was quite a whirlwind. Anyway, and then we got his diagnosis maybe a week after that. And he was diagnosed with stage 4 alveolar rhabdomyosarcoma fusion positive. which is basically a death sentence. Yeah. It's one of the very worst forms of cancer for teenagers. Rhabdomyosarcoma in children is generally a lot more treatable, but his being alveolar and fusion positive basically meant that it's very, very unlikely that you can treat it. So they gave him a 7% chance of survival.
Wow.
Which is actually pretty good given what his diagnosis was. And we've had several friends now over the years who've gotten it that we've met and they've had 0% chances of survival.
Wow. So, yeah. Wow. And I mean, news like that just has to shatter you as a mom.
Yeah.
And not being able to really do much about those odds other than fight through it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. It's pretty earth shattering.
that first time that he ended up having to go in and have that surgery done, mm-hmm. That's right on his spine.
Yeah.
Tons of pain.
Yeah. He actually had two really large incisions along his spine to get relieve that pressure near two of his tumors on his spine. It was, it was really tough.
Blood taste in my mouth. Yeah. I can't, it's not good.
Yeah. Mm. It was tough, but
wow.
He handled it just like a champ.
Yeah.
Just couldn't have handled it better.
That's awesome. From the time that he was diagnosed, how long were you guys fighting it for? And
He fought for 7.5 months before he passed away.
Wow.
So yeah, wow. He was in treatment the whole time, but yeah.
And so during that 7.5 months, what were some really important and key highlights for you of times that you saw Ethan just really come through mentally and be able to push through some of those hardships?
Yeah. So, I mean, immediately when my husband, our family doctor called us with the results that it was cancer, and my husband and I were on the phone with him in our basement so that none of the other kids would hear.
Yeah.
And I just had kind of already felt that it was going to be cancer. Like it was the only thing that made sense to me. And so we came upstairs to tell Ethan and our other five kids, and Ethan was in so much pain. He'd actually been sleeping on an inflatable mattress in our living room because he couldn't do the stairs up to his bedroom. He was in so much pain. And so I knelt next to the inflatable mattress that he was laying on. And I just said, "Hey babe, I hate to have to tell you this, but we just got off the phone with the doctor and you have cancer." And he just went, "Oh, dang."
What?
he was 17. He didn't really fully understand what cancer was or what was going to happen, but at the same time, there was a boy who had cancer the year before Ethan, who had the exact same type of cancer as Ethan.
Wow.
He graduated the year before Ethan. And he had passed away from this exact same type of cancer. So, I mean, he knew cancer was not a great thing. He knew that kids could die from it,
Yeah.
Anyway, but his reaction was, "Oh, dang, okay, well, what do we do?" And I just said, "Well, we're gonna take you to the hospital. We're gonna see what we can do about getting you better," kind of a thing, Anyway, but the very first thing that my husband did, though, was gather us all together as a family to pray. And then immediately after the prayer, my son just said, "You know what? It's going to be fine. I'm not worried about it. It's going to be fine." And I was just like, "Okay, I want to believe that. That sounds great."
Yeah, let's go with that
exactly.
Answer. Other than the answer that you probably had in your head.
Yes,
of how
the panic,
it was
react. panic. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. So just from the get-go, yeah. Showing that much faith and strength.
Yeah.
Where do you think you got that from? Where do you think that came about?
A big part of it was just his personality. I mean, from the time that he was a little boy, he's just been a very valiant, obedient, just strong spirit. That's just who he was. He'd had a blessing, his patriarchal blessing when he was young,
yeah.
Or not when he was young, but about a year before this. And he relied a lot on that.
Yeah.
Like he really, really just felt like it's going to be okay no matter what. And,
yeah.
And he told me many times while he was in treatment, he was like, I'm not saying that I couldn't die. He's like, and I'm not, he's like, I'm honestly not scared to die. He's like, I just don't think I will. I was like, okay, I like that. Let's do that.
Yeah, let's go with your
I'll stick
answer,
with that. Yeah.
Sure. That's awesome. And so, you know, what other things or times did you see that same resolve or that resilience?
So, he had to do two, he would, his treatment consisted of two different types of chemo basically that were, well, it was several different types, but two different rounds. So he would every 3 weeks have a really rough round of chemo.
Yeah.
And then the weeks in between he would have easy rounds. And so the easy rounds were no big deal. Like he would have a little bit of numbness in his hands and feet, but the rough rounds, one of them was, you know, just kind of would knock him flat. He would be really tired. He'd be nauseous, but you know, he would mostly just sleep. The other was 5 days in a row of a chemo medication called irinotecan. And it was just so, so hard for him. It would make him incredibly sick. He wouldn't be able to eat. And it was 5 days. So, you know, it'd be 5 days of him barely being able to keep water down, not being able to eat anything, wow. Like just wanting, you know, and I would just try to make him sleep as much as possible so that he could just rest, you know, like, and not be awake for it. But, I remember the very first round he did of irinotecan, you know, you have to drive, we would drive up to Salt Lake every day. So it was like an hour drive there and an hour drive back. And then you spend forever in the hospital while they, you know, administer these medicines. And we would, it was just a long, miserable day to begin with. And then he's super sick on top of it. And you do this day after day, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, and by the time that we hit day five, he was just so, so, so sick, just so sick. And I remember trying to just get him to just drink a little bit of water and just trying to get him to take just a little bit of medicine that would help him be less nauseous before we went to the hospital to get more of this terrible medicine. And he started throwing up and I broke down and I didn't start crying, but I was mad. And I was just like, that's it. I hate irinotecan. I hate it. And my cute boy, sorry, I'm probably going to cry. Anyway, my cute boy looked up at me and just so lovingly just looked at me and just said, Mom, you can't say that. We can't hate any of this. This is medicine that's going to help me get better. We're not allowed to act like that. And I was just like, oh my gosh. Talk about like the most humbling experience of my entire life, you know. But he was so positive and he was just like, no, this medicine, it makes me feel terrible, but it is so good. Yeah. It is what's going to help me, you know, like just so faithful.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just such a strong resolve and to be able to call you out like that.
I know.
Like,
I know.
That's a lot of power and a good relationship, obviously, yeah. If he was able to do that with
yes,
you.
Yes. We had a very special relationship.
That's awesome. And so was there ever a time that you saw him, you know, get down or go into a bad place, I guess, in his mind?
You know, not really. The closest that he came, there were two times that he came kind of close. One was after a round of irinotecan, and he was just still feeling really sick. It was days after he had finished it, and he still just was like struggling to eat and just was feeling really, really down that he just still felt so sick.
Yeah.
But he told me that he said a prayer over his food that I had made for him. And he said that he prayed and asked Heavenly Father just to help him not feel so, so sad. And he said, and immediately it just lifted. He said it just lifted and he just felt so much peace and so much joy again.
Yeah.
And he said that he never felt sad again after that. Like anytime he thought about it, he was just like, nope, it was all good.
Wow.
But then the closest he ever came to complaining, and he still didn't complain. But in the weeks leading up to his death, he was just super sick, and he had finished a round of chemo that was, it seemed pretty typical, but he just wasn't bouncing back like he normally did. And normally, like 2 or 3 days after a round of chemo, he would bounce back and start eating and feeling good and all those things and stop throwing up. And this round, he just wasn't bouncing back. He was still sleeping a lot and he was still throwing up every day. And I just was like, what is going on? We talked to the doctors and they didn't understand what was going on. And anyway, little did we know that his cancer had moved into his cerebrospinal fluid, which we didn't know was even a possibility. But very, very rare complication with alveolar rhabdo. Anyway, and so he was dealing with, and dizziness and all of these things. And so it was just day after day of us expecting him to turn a corner and start feeling good and, you know, stop throwing up and feel okay and be able to hang out with his friends again. And he had a girlfriend, be able to see his girlfriend, and, you know, all of these things. And it just wasn't happening. And he looked at me a couple of times and just, it broke my heart, but he would just look at me and be like, "Mom, how much longer do you think it's going to be before I feel better?" And I would just be like, "Oh, baby, I have no idea. I am so sorry."
Yeah.
It just rips your heart out as a parent to have to tell him that, you know. But every time he would just be like, "That's okay. I'm okay. It's not that big a deal." And then, you know, he'd be throwing up an hour later and I would be like, you know, there helping him and cleaning up and stuff. And I would just be like, "I'm so sorry, babe. I'm so, so sorry." And he was like, "Oh, Mom, I'm fine. It's not that big a deal." You know, like, never a complaint, literally never a complaint. But those were the only times that I saw him kind of go, "Oh, this is tough."
Yeah. Wow. After all of that he went through, that's crazy. Yeah. That's the only times that you've seen that.
I know.
So we've talked a lot about Ethan's mental health and where he was at mentally. Yeah. As far as you as a mom and not being able to fully help him the way that you would like to help him, where was your mental state through this time and how did you not just lose it?
So, you know, in the midst of it, you really don't have a choice. Yeah. You know, you power through because they need you to power through.
Yeah, like, you just suck it up.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's survival mode at its finest. You know, it's just, I will do anything to make, for me, it was, I will do anything to make this easier for you. You know, that was my only goal, was just anything. I will lose any amount of sleep. I will do whatever I have to do. I mean, I would set alarms for every, you know, 45 minutes at night so that I could give him meds. He ended up with a G-tube. And so it was so nice because I could give him medicine while he slept and help him to not feel sick. You know, like I could really, but I mean, I would not sleep. I would go long periods of time with very, very small amounts of sleep and very little amounts of food. And, you know, I lost a lot of weight and I ended up weighing like, I think 99 pounds at one point.
Wow.
Just sleep deprived and hungry. And, you know, but I literally just was like, lay it all out on the line for this kid, you know, like whatever he needs, anything. But I think that's just kind of what you do as a mom.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is being a mom to the extreme at that point. And I think there's so much power in being able to have that type of a relationship. And not very many people in their lifetime will be able to give that much dedication to something.
I honestly, like, it's something that I have thought about a lot since he's been gone, in that it sounds really sad, but I would never wish for him to have to go back to that ever. Yeah. And I have never felt more fulfilled as a person and as a mother. And it was such a beautiful, incredible Christ-like experience for me to be able to serve and love on that level. And it's something that I wouldn't trade for anything. And I would never want anything like this to happen to any of my other kids. And yet I wish I could have this same relationship with every one of my kids. My kids got the flu over Christmas and I was like, "Oh, I'm back." It's like, this is a small moment, but I have this chance to like just love and dote on you and take care of you, you know, like, and just this little moment where I felt like, "Oh, this reminds me of taking care of Ethan." You know?
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure it's hard to come down from that level that you were at.
It's been really, really hard. It's messed with my sense of self in a lot of ways. Like, really? Because I've told my husband, I was like, I feel so worthless, whereas I felt so worthwhile and needed and loved, you know what I mean? Like, and my boy couldn't have shown me more love and appreciation. Like, he loved me so much and thanked me constantly, you know, like just was so kind and so loving. Anyway, and we literally never like were frustrated with each other, nothing. I mean, it was beautiful. It was a beautiful relationship and a really beautiful experience.
Well, and I think too, it proves the point of having a purpose will strengthen you mentally more than a lot of other things.
Yeah.
I mean, to be able to go on that little amount of sleep, that little amount of food, and just the stresses that should come, bills that are coming in because of it, like all of these things that would be coming in, you're able to push through because you have a purpose.
Yeah, it's so true.
And I think as our listeners are listening to this, if you can find out what that purpose is and make sure it's worthwhile. We talk about finding your why on this podcast, and you have to find that and make sure that that's strong. If it's not a strong purpose, you're going to break down because of the small things. Whereas with a great purpose, you're able to push through some really, really hard things.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. So from Ethan's experience, what would you say is like two miracles that you saw?
Yeah. So I didn't realize at the time what a huge miracle this was. It's been since he's passed away that I realized what a miracle it was. But because I follow now a lot of kids who have rhabdo, and his same type of rhabdo, I have seen that blood transfusions are just the norm. Like their treatment wipes out their, you know, their immune system, their blood cells, like, you know, it really just tanks them. And so blood transfusions are super common for kids with rhabdo, like, and a lot of them.
Yeah.
And Ethan never had a single blood transfusion. I mean, he had twice that his blood dipped a little, but never into like a real danger zone. Never, you know, there was never any concern. His blood just, I mean, I remember just thinking, wow, he's doing so good. He's handling this so well. You know, like I was so impressed. But now that he's gone and I see these other kids that are just constantly in the hospital, they're constantly needing transfusions. I did not realize what a miracle that was. It was such a cool, cool miracle.
And what a blessing. Yeah. I mean, because he would have had to go through a lot of that and...
Yeah, well, and it would have been less time spent with us at home. You know, like every hospital stay when you have a kid with cancer, hospital stays are very common. And, you know, it was such a blessing that he got to spend time with his friends. He got to spend time with his siblings. He got to spend time with his girlfriend. He got time with us, which we desperately needed because we didn't realize how short time really was going to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
And then the second was the miracle at his passing. So there's no way I'm going to be able to tell this story without crying. So just buckle up. I do not love tears, but it's going to happen. So we knew Ethan was going to pass, and because he had this infection in his cerebrospinal fluid, he was basically catatonic. He was in a kind of like a coma. They had intubated him because basically his brain was shutting down. His brain was being damaged by the cancer, and it was swelling and so they knew he was going to die. And so we had him on life support long enough for us all to say goodbye to him. And it was a wonderful blessing. His siblings got to come and, you know, do handprints and spend time with him and hug him and tell him how much they loved him and all of this while he was, you know, basically in a coma. Anyway, but it left my husband and I needing to decide when to remove his breathing tube, which no parent should ever have to make a decision like that. Like, talk about like the most brutal, one of the most brutal things you could ever have to do, you know? So we knew we were going to remove his breathing tube the following day. Like, the kids had all come and said goodbye, and we had family that all wanted to come and, you know, give him loves and things before he passed and stuff. And so everybody had come and said goodbye, and my husband and I were just in the room with him, and just, I laid in bed with him for the last probably 2 days of his life and just held him and kissed him and constantly just told him how much I loved him and how proud I was of him. And, it came time, my husband was like, I can't go tell the nurse that we're ready to remove his breathing tube. And he was like, can you please do it? And I was like, yeah, I can do that. So I went and told her, and then she was like, okay, we're going to get the, you know, the team in here. Everybody, like, doctors have to come and watch as he passes. And, you know, they give him medicine to make sure that his passing is as comfortable as possible. And I was so petrified that his passing would be in any way hard for me to watch, you know, struggle to breathe, if he were to moan, anything, like, would have just ripped my heart out, you know? And so I asked the doctor multiple times, I'm like, what is going to happen?
Yeah.
Tell me what's going to happen. I need to know. I can't be surprised. I have to understand. I have to know. And he just said, I don't even expect him to take a single breath. He said, I just think his heart will slowly stop beating because his brain is so damaged at this point. There's no way that he's going to breathe. Yeah. And I just said, okay, I can deal with that. Anyway, but so they were gathering things. I ran into the restroom and I am feeling nauseous. I am feeling petrified. I am feeling all kinds of panic stricken. anyway, but I knelt in the bathroom and I just said, you know, Heavenly Father, this is really, really important. This is the hardest thing I'm ever going to have to do. But I just said, I just need his passing to be peaceful. I just need it to be peaceful. I cannot watch him struggle anymore. He's struggled so much. And I just said, I just need it to be peaceful. And then I just said, and please, the only thing I can think of that I can do in this moment to care for my baby, you know, as he passes from this life, is to be able to sing to him. And I sung to Ethan at his baptism, and it was a really special thing, and he cried and I cried, and he was only 8 at the time, you know, but anyway, I just said, please just help me to not sob and let me be able to sing to my baby as he passes. That's all I need. And I just said, we're not going to get a lot of the things I've asked for over the last year. You know, I've asked for a lot of blessings we're not going to get, but I need this one. Anyway, and so I went out and climbed into bed with my boy. They removed his breathing tube and he did not take a single breath. He did not make a sound. He laid there, held my hand, and I sang every primary song I could think of. And my voice did not crack. My voice did not break. And I did not shed a single tear until his heart stopped. And for me, that was an unbelievable miracle.
Yeah.
You know? And we have the nurse that took care of Ethan all 3 nights that he was there in the hospital before he passed messaged me later. And she said, that was an otherworldly experience for me. She just said, I've never experienced anything so beautiful. And wow. That meant a lot to me.
Wow. Yeah. Well, it's awesome that you were able to see God's hand through the whole experience, and especially there at those last days, which was what a blessing.
Yeah.
So you mentioned earlier that you are a very goal-oriented person, and with those goals and just kind of being able to have control over your life, right?
Yeah. Who doesn't like that? A little bit of control.
That's not possible with a son that's going through cancer. So tell me how that went in your mind as far as, you know, not being able to have that control. How does somebody that is really goal-oriented, wants control, be able to handle uncertainty?
Yeah. It's a really tough thing, and it's still something that I'm struggling with big time. It's not something that I'm great at, but for me, a lot of it comes down to faith and just trusting that Heavenly Father's plan for our lives is better than ours, which is really hard to believe because I feel like my plan was way better than his in this situation, but that's what faith is, you know, being able to hand it over. But my testimony of my Savior was already really strong before all of this. I've relied on my Savior many, many times. And this experience, if anything, has just made me it's made my faith in my Savior so much stronger. And my realization of how much he cares and how much he loves us and how much he really is there for us became so evident. And I felt like, especially at Ethan's passing, I felt like I kind of left a little bit of faith behind, and I moved more towards knowledge, because the Savior was with us. Like we were not alone in that room. Like I know that Ethan was greeted by the Savior. I have no doubt about it. And so my faith, you know, really, really carried me through in those moments when I was not in control.
Yeah, definitely. Leaving it up to him is a huge deal, especially in my life. And I know that as others, you know, go through these hard times, you know, your faith or your family or whatever your rock is, make sure that you go to that place.
Yeah.
Because there's too much that's going to be up in the air in your life. So very important. So you mentioned on our phone call that you have, been going to therapy and making sure that you're feeling supported there. You know, can you tell us a little bit about that process and, you know, in your opinion, how do you know when you need therapy versus when you don't and just need to stick it out and work through it?
Yeah. I definitely don't think, you know, every situation needs therapy. I felt right from the beginning that I would do therapy. Even if Ethan had gotten better, I think I would have done therapy because it's just so traumatic. A cancer journey, especially watching your child go through cancer, is so traumatic, you know? And I had just so much trauma that I knew I needed to address and process. And so for me, I think, in my opinion, what in my mind qualifies you for probably needing to consider therapy is if you are coping in unhealthy ways, if you find yourself, you know, turning to food, turning to alcohol, you know, turning to these things that are not going to help you cope in a healthy way, or, you know, you're finding yourself dealing with, I think everyone who goes through this type of grief deals with anger. But if you find yourself, you know, dealing with anger that is beyond what you can control. I definitely have had my fair share of anger, but which is not a normal emotion for me. I am not generally an angry person. So it's been shocking for me at times. I'm like, where did that come from? But it has never reached for me a point where, you know, I felt concerned about those around me. It's always just been more of an internal anger.
You've had good outlets, I'm sure.
Anyway, but in my mind, you know, coping in unhealthy ways is kind of one of the biggest things that I would say you have to really be careful of. But my therapy has helped me so much in that, like, in the beginning, I wouldn't have been able to have these conversations. Like, I remember I went on a hike with a good friend of mine. She's a cancer mom as well, but her son is doing great, which is awesome. But we were on a hike and she was asking, you know, well, what happened? Like, I don't know. Like, because we had just had results that Ethan was cancer free. And so it was a real shock that he passed away. It kind of came out of the blue. And so she was kind of asking, well, what happened, you know? And so I kind of took her through the story of, you know, I found my, like, I left Ethan's bedside for 20 minutes, only 20 minutes. And I literally was by his bed almost constantly, but I left for 20 minutes to help my husband with something. And when I walked back up the stairs, I found him in his bed, just staring at the ceiling and completely non-responsive. And of course, just freaked out. And, you know, we rushed him to the emergency room. And, you know, our time in the emergency room is something that is incredibly traumatic. Watching him so quickly deteriorate and then, you know, struggling to breathe and his body being, you know, flailing and uncontrolled. It was really, really upsetting. And my husband and I both really, really struggled. But anyway, when I told my friend what had happened, I sobbed and sobbed and sobbed, which is totally normal and okay. But I mean, it was violent. I was so, so, so distraught. And I remember just thinking, oh my gosh, will I ever be able to think back on these memories in a calm way, you know? And I've done therapy and I've been doing EMDR therapy, which
What is that?
So it is, I'm hoping I don't butcher the name, but it's eye movement dissociative reprocessing. So it helps you basically look at these really traumatic moments and you process them kind of again and again until they become less traumatic to feel. So like in the beginning, every time I would think about the moment that I found Ethan in his bed or watching him in the emergency room, I would feel like I was back in the moment and I would immediately kind of freeze and I would have an anxiety attack. And I would feel like I was going to throw up. I would, you know, I mean, just like all of these emotions would just hit me like a sledgehammer and it would just be really, really hard. And now, I mean, it's not a great memory. I don't love them, but I also don't have that trauma response that my body used to have. And I can talk about them and I'm okay. You know, so it's helped a ton. It's been really, really helpful. I highly recommend anyone who is going through any type of a serious trauma that way to do some EMDR.
Well, and I think that's good to understand your body and just the way that you react to things during these times. It just helps to have somebody else that's an outside source that says, looks at it and says, hey,
Yeah.
That's not a healthy way to cope with it.
Yeah.
Or
we can help you to feel better, you know, exactly. Like, I mean, just it's been really, really helpful for me.
That's awesome. So I'm going to kind of pull a country song at this point.
And nice. Say,
if you could write a letter back to yourself prior to Ethan finding out about cancer, what would you try and tell yourself to prepare yourself mentally? What can you maybe help yourself understand that would have made you stronger as you went through it?
Yeah. So, it's funny cause this is something I think about a lot now is like, what would I say to myself, you know?
Yeah.
I think one of the biggest things that I have learned through all of this is I am learning how to be kinder to myself, which has never been my strong suit. I've usually been pretty demanding and of myself and pretty harsh with myself.
Yeah.
Anyway, but I think I would tell myself, you are so much stronger than you think you are.
Yeah.
And Ethan is so much stronger than you're giving him credit for.
Yeah.
I really like my biggest fear when Ethan was first diagnosed was that at some point, and this may make me cry, but at some point that he might look at me with panic and say, Mom, I can't do this.
Yeah.
Or that they would tell him that he was going to die for sure.
Yeah.
And that he would look at me in panic and just say, Mom, I don't want to die.
Like, yeah.
That was my biggest fear. And he never, ever even came close to anything like that. He never was panicked. He was never scared. He was always brave. Like, anyway, I just realized that I think I was I would have underestimated us, you know, before. And now, you know, I know better. I know that I'm strong enough. I know that he's strong enough. And then also I think I would remind myself that where we are weak, our Heavenly Father and our Savior are strong.
Yeah.
And that they're never going to leave us. They will always be there. That they are going to be with us through every step of the journey, and that I don't need to worry because, I mean, there's no way to get around worrying. It's okay.
Yeah.
But that they have us and that we're okay.
Well, and I think what's cool about that is just being able to see Ethan's potential and what he, you know, was able to handle.
Yeah.
You would have never known that if he wouldn't have been stretched outside his limits.
Yeah.
and just pushed to the very edge, and yours as well.
Yeah.
And I think too often, and we've talked about this on this podcast before, is just that unless you allow yourself to go outside of your comfort zone, you don't realize how powerful, how strong you are and what you can handle unless you push past that. And not very many people go outside of that these days.
No, it's so true. And, you know, I have been good at pushing myself beyond physical comfort zones. That's something that's been, you know, a strength I have. But emotional comfort zones have never been my strength. But I think I told you on the phone when Ethan was about to start chemotherapy, I was just terrified at the thought of him beginning chemo. I did not want him to have to do it, you know?
Yeah.
And the day he was supposed to start, I remember just like pep talking myself in the mirror before he started. And I was just like, and it wasn't about Ethan in that moment. It was about Sadie. It was all about Sadie. But I was just like, you are strong. You know, you're strong. You can hike the Y in under 20 minutes. Like, you can do this. This is going to be okay. You have proven time and time again that you are strong and that you can handle really hard things. This is completely different, and it is a new kind of way to have to be strong, but you can do it, you know? Like, and I pep talked myself into it. It was okay.
Well, I think it's cool that you recognize that, hey, you are strong in certain areas. And those strengths do correlate over to other areas, but definitely I was thinking the other day about whether, you know, if I looked at my strengths and my mental, physical, you know, all of that, if I would be pretty round or if it would be really one way and not the other.
Yeah, I don't know that I've always been perfectly balanced.
Yeah,
I
don't think I'm very balanced. So, and which is a lot of the reason why I created this podcast, was to be able to push myself and learn from other people's experiences. So
that's awesome.
I definitely need to be rounded in those. I'm sure that cancer, and I've seen this in my own life, but puts a strain on relationships and really makes it hard. Obviously, yours and Ethan's was very, very strong.
Mm-hmm.
How help somebody else that's going through this mm-hmm. maintain strong relationships? What did you have to do to try and maintain a strong relationship even after the fact?
Yeah, so, that's kind of a complicated one. So one thing I would say is that we all have these wonderful people in our lives who want to help us.
Yeah.
And when you have a child who has cancer or who dies from cancer, you know, or, you know, similar situations, they can't, there's nothing they can do.
Yeah.
It's a really helpless feeling for them, and it's a helpless feeling for you. People come to you constantly and say, well, what can we do? And I just find myself often, I remember finding myself all the time just going, I don't know, can you make Ethan not have cancer? Or can you make Ethan not dead?
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
Like literally the only thing I need is the thing you can't do.
Yeah.
And so, but I know some people and the anger doesn't help. So it can be easy to get frustrated with the people in your life because they don't always know the best ways to help. They don't always know the best things to say. And so they can sometimes be very, very unintentionally unkind or,
like ignorant of
very ignorant. Yeah. Yes. And it's not their fault. I guarantee that I was in the exact same situation many, many times, but it takes a lot of patience and love to realize that the person who has just maybe hurt your feelings or said something completely ridiculous,
yeah,
that they are literally just trying to show you that they love you. Yeah. And so that's one thing I would say is just make sure that you remember that this person who maybe at the moment is frustrating you or not saying exactly the right thing,
yeah,
is just trying to show you that they love you. So, you know, don't push away the people who love you.
Right, right.
So that to me was kind of an important one because the best people in your life will show up,
yeah,
and you don't want to chase them away, you
right.
know? And I've been really, really blessed with some awesome, awesome people who show up. And I mean, so many, so, so many. I am so blessed. And, you know, it can be hard because, you know, it's tough. It's a tough situation, but, you know, you just got to be patient.
Yeah, you probably feel pretty isolated, you
yes.
know, in that moment, especially like during the funeral and other things.
Yeah, but I mean, before he was sick, I mean, I didn't have a single friend who had a kid with cancer. So,
yeah.
I mean, how could my best friend, my best friend was incredible. She was there the day that Ethan was diagnosed. She was there the day that Ethan died. She bent over backwards for everything. My family was incredible. They've never lost a child to cancer,
yeah,
you know, like they have never been through my exact experience and, you know, how could they possibly know? And it does, it feels very isolating. Even in the cancer world, I feel actually pretty isolated a lot of the time because most children recover from childhood cancer. It's very rare that children die from childhood cancer.
Yeah.
And so even within that circle, which I have a lot of cancer mom friends now,
yeah,
I'm kind of the odd man out in a lot of those situations, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, so that can be, it can be tough. It can
yeah.
be tough, but they're wonderful people who love you and who want to help you. So I just think it's good to cling to that and remember that.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
And then for close relationships, like, so this legit, you know, like turned my marriage on its head.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I mean, and not in necessarily like horrific ways, but it just made me just go, oh my goodness, like we've been gliding along and, you know, and then you spend a year, you know, almost a year with your kid in treatment and then dealing with the aftermath of his death and all of this. And you're just in survival mode for so long that your relationships really become neglected.
Yeah.
And anyway, but the great thing that this did was that it's taught me a lot of really important things about what are the most important relationships in my life, which is my family.
Yeah.
And my husband, and it's forced me to look at myself and see where I am not a great spouse.
Yeah.
And it's forced me to go, oh, that is not helping my marriage. I thought that was helping my marriage. That is not helping. I tend to be very passive and I tend to be very boundaryless.
Yeah.
And I have realized that I always thought that was a good thing. I always thought that was great. And part of my therapy actually helped me realize that's not great.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have to learn to be stronger in certain ways. And so I've actually learned to be a little more forthright and honest. And even when it might hurt someone's feelings, be like, nope, that's not okay with me. I'm sorry. I don't like that, you know?
Well, and I think being introspective, like looking at yourself, yeah, realizing those things that need to change.
Yeah.
It's, it's part of the process of just becoming better each and every day. Yeah. And especially with our relationships and those people that we're around, sometimes we don't put an emphasis on it.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think it's really important for us as we deal with our spouse or other people that we make sure that it's healthy. And I'm sure you seeing Ethan pass away made you realize how short this life is.
Yeah.
And how important it is to speed that process up of learning.
Yeah.
And speaking up for yourself, you know, and making sure that.
Well, and wanting, I just found myself thinking, I want to have great relationships yeah. with everyone that I love. You know, I don't want to settle for ho-hum relationships. I want great relationships with these people, you know.
Yeah.
And obviously my spouse was number one, you know, and I was like, no, I need to. And the only person you can change is yourself, of course, you yep. know. And so I was like, I need to make the changes that are necessary for us to have this great relationship that I want. I don't want to, you know. And you're right. It's so funny because you lose a child and I feel like it's kind of like someone took your blinders off and suddenly you're like, oh, people don't realize life is short and it's fragile and we gotta make the most of it.
Yeah.
Like it's really, really important.
A big catalyst to yeah. what you're trying to do for yeah. sure. So let's fast forward to today. Like how are you dealing with Ethan's loss? And you know, what advice would you give to somebody that's had a loved one pass on as far as today and what you're dealing with?
Yeah. So, to address that, I would say for somebody who's lost a loved one, I would just say really be patient with yourself. Like that's such a hard one for me to be patient with myself. And I want to do it well. And I remember just like thinking in the weeks after Ethan passed away, am I doing this right? I don't know if I'm doing this right. Like yeah. you're doing it right. If you're crying a lot and you're feeling depressed, you're doing it right. You're yeah. doing great.
Nobody teaches you this.
No, exactly. But luckily I had, you know, friends and family who'd experienced loss that warned me just, you know, feel the feelings, don't fight them, roll with them. And I had somebody tell me, they're like, ride the waves of your emotions. And I am not good at that. I'm really good at trying to tuck it in and I don't want people to see me crying. And I don't, you know, I want to feel in control. I want to feel in control.
Yeah.
And so that's been a really, really tough thing for me. But I think it's really important that people understand that that is just what grief is. Grief yep. is just, it is a roller coaster. It is so hard and you're doing fine. And you get the help that you need if you need it. And there's no judgment on what that looks like.
Yeah.
Like I've had to really, you know, I've had to really rethink a lot of things just going, oh, no, to get through this. I didn't eat sugar for many years before yeah. Ethan passed away. Not because I don't like sugar. I like sugar a lot. Sugar doesn't like me. And it tends to make me sick. And yeah. so for years, I just was like, I'm just not going to eat it anymore. And yeah. so I cut out sugar years ago. Well, then after Ethan passed away, I found myself like going, who cares?
Yeah.
I don't care. Like I'm going to eat it. I don't care if it makes me sick. I'm going to eat it
yeah.
because right now I just want it, you know?
Yeah.
And I've had to learn to be very, very gentle with myself because I've had a lot more sugar over the last year than I have in many years before. Anyway, but I just have to keep reminding myself it's okay. It's going to be okay. Exactly. Yep. You don't have to do this perfectly. It's going to be just fine.
Yeah. So talk me through what you're doing today to kind of grow and to continue to live. I mean, it's so hard to move on past this, but what are you doing today for yourself to continue to live?
Yeah. So I'm still in therapy. In the beginning I was going, so I started maybe a few months after Ethan passed away. I felt like I needed a little bit of time before I was ready. And then I did therapy weekly for a long time and now I'm doing monthly.
Yeah.
Which I feel like is a good balance for me at the moment. Anyway, but the therapy really does still help. And if I feel lots of emotion come up, we bring EMDR back into it. And I think yeah. I'll probably end up doing quite a bit of that. We're nearing the 1 year anniversary of Ethan's passing in March. And I have a feeling I'll need to brush up on that a little bit more, but, yeah. I am reading a lot more self-help books. That's something I have never liked. I do not like self-help books. I am all about fiction and fantasy.
Gotcha.
I want to escape reality when I read, but I have needed, you know, a lot more self-help things. I've read a lot more things just to help me understand my brain, understand grief, you know, kind of get through just this tough time.
Gotcha.
I've learned that I'm a lot braver than I thought. Yeah. I have always thought that I was just the world's biggest wuss. I don't love roller coasters. I don't love anything scary. And I'm realizing that that really isn't bravery. Anyway, I'm also learning that I'm capable of a lot of things. And I've also learned what true hard looks like.
Yeah.
And so things that I used to stress over, I now just am kind of like, that does not matter. That doesn't matter. That's not important. That's okay.
You know? I like that idea of true hard. That's awesome.
There's few things in life I think that can teach you true hard quite as good as my experience.
Yeah. Wow.
It makes a lot of other things just seem so silly now.
It refocuses the lens, right?
It really does. It really does.
So are there any books that you've read or podcasts or things that our listeners could go ahead and read or link onto?
Yeah. So I made a little list. There's a book that I really just really helped me a lot, especially in the early days of my grief. It's called I Wasn't Ready to Say Goodbye by Brooke Noel and Pamela D. Blair. Anyway, that really helped me. I don't know if your listeners are familiar with Jenny Page. Mm-hmm. She's an artist and she's also a ninja. Like, she does ninja warrior competitions. Wow. She's incredible. You should follow her on Instagram. She's so fun. But she's cool. She lost a son in a drowning accident years ago, and she wrote a book called Coming Full Circle. And it's art. It's mixed with her art and her words.
Wow.
And that has been really, really helpful for me. One of the best things that I've done is I started following a lot of Instagram accounts about grief and mental health. And the grief accounts just really have helped me, like, just to not feel so alone. Because you experience a lot of really random and crazy emotions that just are so not normal for me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, is this normal? I don't understand what's going on. Why do I feel this way? Like, why? I've never felt like this before. And then somebody will post something about it on a grief account, and I'm like, oh, it is normal. They felt like that. Okay. I'm okay. You know? Like,
yeah.
We got this. Okay. You know? Anyway, so that's really helped me a lot. And then there's a woman that I follow on Instagram, and she specifically is for child loss. She has 8 children, and she's lost 2 in tragic accidents, 2 of her daughters in tragic accidents. And her name is Jen Larson. Anyway, and she has really, really helped me just to kind of see that, because the grief of a child is unique. You know, you're supposed to outlive your children. You're supposed to watch your children get married. You're supposed to, you know, like, it's a unique loss.
Yeah.
And so having her perspective has really been helpful. But she said something on her Instagram that I wanted to share that I just thought was so awesome. But she said, make your story one you would want to read. Wow. And I was like, and there are times when I feel genuinely just like, I just want to give up. I don't want to keep trying. I don't want to keep going to church. I don't want to keep saying my prayers. I don't want to keep even caring for my own children, which is so bizarre.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole thing, like I said, I feel things that I just never imagined I would feel. I don't want to get out of bed. You know, I mean, just basic things like in the beginning, like just basic things like getting out of bed to try to help my kids get breakfast was debilitating. It was so hard. and luckily that's gotten better as time has gone by, but it's really, really hard. But when she said that, make your story one you would want to read, I thought, I wouldn't want to read a story where the woman gives up and stays in bed all day and gives into this depression. I would want to read a story of overcoming. I would want to read a story of strength where she goes on and she does great things, where she lives a life that is purposeful and that shows the bravery of her child and the love of her child that she lost. Like, I would want to read that. That's what I want.
So. Yeah. Well, and I think too, I mean, that story of overcoming, mm-hmm. I love that, because it's only when you decide to stop trying that you truly lose in life.
Yeah.
And I think that just attacking it every day, you are going to have those moments. You're going to have those highs, those lows, all of that. But what makes a comeback story is that you come back, you show up, you make things happen, even though you don't want to.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of power in that. And as our listeners, you know, listen to this, I hope that you guys realize how important it is to, even though it's difficult, even though you've got those things happening in your life, just to overcome and to show up. You know, the first step is just getting out of bed, right?
And it's not going to look great.
No.
There are a lot of days when it is just barely scraping by, but I'm still doing it, you know?
Yeah. It's a good thing our life isn't a short story.
Exactly. Right?
It would look pretty bad. Yes. But it's not going to look great. It's a long story, and we're able to look at over time of how you've changed and how you've grown. Don't allow your life to be a Dr. Seuss book, short and sweet and to the point. Let's get a
Harry Potter novel. Yep. Let's get a Harry Potter novel.
Exactly. Well, Sadie, thank you so much for coming today. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners or those that maybe are dealing with things like this?
I think really just cling to the things that make you strong. Like, yeah. Find things that make you happy. One of the things, the conversations that I had with Ethan early on in his treatment was, you know, I had to have some really harsh conversations with him about, you know, how sick he was going to get and how he was going to feel and the fact that he probably wouldn't be able to have children if he got better. Like, all of these really harsh, conversations for a 17-year-old to have to get from his mom.
Yeah.
Anyway, but I told him at that moment, I said, but we're going to find ways to be happy. We're going to find things that make us happy. We're going to find ways to make this doable. And we can do that. You know, that's something that's within our power. I find ways every day to do things that make me happy,
yeah,
that, you know, make me remember Ethan, that, you know, help me to be close with my other children, that, you know, I find ways to make myself happy every day, even though it sometimes feels like an impossibility.
Yeah, you definitely have to choose happy.
Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome. Well, thank you again so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. I'm so happy I got to come.
A loaded podcast, and I'm so excited to be able to see you continue to grow and continue to move along and change that story of overcoming throughout your life. So thanks so much. We'll see ya.